Good afternoon, and welcome to the Iowa City Foreign Relations Council's program featuring guest speaker Dr. Nada Melham. Well, thank you for joining us in person and via live stream today. My name is Janet Linus, and I'm a member of the ICFRC Board of Directors. This year, we are celebrating ICFRC's 40th anniversary. We have some great plans this year with a total of four events dedicated to celebrating our supporters, our legacy in the community, and the bright future that we have in store ahead for us for internationally focused programming. We hope that you will check out our website and sign up for our monthly newsletter, as well as check out our programs. As well, you can also follow us on social media to learn more about the exciting stuff that will be happening this year. So lots of good things going on with ICFRC this year. ICFRC wants to acknowledge and thank its annual donors, our sponsors, and partners for their support. This includes the Iowa Arts Council through the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs, Humanities Iowa and the National Endowment for the Humanities, the University of Iowa's International Programs, Honors Program, and Public Policy Center, the Stanley U of I Foundation Support Organization, Midwest One Bank, Taxes Plus, City Channel 4 for providing online access to ICFRC's programs, along with the U of I Library Archives, where you can check out any of our former programs as well, and especially the Iowa City Public Library for our new home here in their beautiful space. And last but not least, the longstanding support from individuals who have helped our organization grow for 40 years now, some of who are even in the audience today. So thank you very much. Now, I also want to acknowledge for the ICFRC that we have adopted the Native American Land Acknowledgement prepared for the City of Iowa City's Ad Hoc Truth and Reconciliation Commission and Human Rights Commission. ICFRC recognizes that our home community of Iowa City now occupies the homeland of Native American nations to whom we owe our commitment and dedication. The full text of ICFRC's acknowledgement is on our website in icfrc.org. I would now like to introduce our speaker. Dr. Nada Melham is a tenured professor of infectious disease and microbiology, virology, and immunology as a faculty member of health sciences at American University of Beirut. Dr. Melham is currently the director of the Division of Health Professions and chair of the Medical Laboratory Sciences Program at the Faculty of Health Sciences. With a unique background and training in virology, immunology, and epidemiology, Dr. Melham developed at AUB a transdisciplinary and translational research program focusing on viral immunopathogenesis and the epidemiology of viruses and their impact on global human health. Dr. Melham's research program focuses on human immunodeficiency virus type 1, which we know as HIV-1, viral diarrheal diseases, specifically noroviruses, and the COVID-19. Dr. Melham is currently leading the SARS-CoV-2 National Surveillance Genomic Program for healthcare workers and hospitalized patients. Please join me in welcoming our speaker, Dr. Nada Melham, who will talk to us about cholera in Lebanon, an old disease with a new comeback. Thank you. Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this introduction. I'm really very humbled to be part, of the long list of events that you have lined up. So thank you for having me. Now, globally, it is estimated that cholera causes 1.3 to 4 million cases and 21,000 to 143,000 deaths per year.
This disease has been described as a disease of the poor living in suboptimal conditions, specifically with poor, with lack of access to safe water and poor sanitation measures. And importantly, countries in conflict are increasingly vulnerable to cholera as well as other infectious diseases due to displacement, to living in settlements, overcrowding, and of course, poor access to healthcare services. Cholera is an acute diarrheal disease that is caused by a bacterial agent called Vibrio cholerae. And we do have two main, actually, groups or genotypes. We call them genotypes that are responsible for the past outbreaks. And we've had, since the late 1800s until now, seven pandemics, actually. And these groups are what we call them O1 and O1-3. Before we launch into the discussion of Lebanon, I'm going to, you know, position the case of cholera based on a number of factors that could lead the disease as well as the discussion later on. I would like to remind you as well that globally 1.8 billion people live in households that lack access to water supplies. So this is an important component that exposes different people to infectious diseases such as cholera and others. The agent or Vibrio cholerae is capable of causing disease after acquisition within 2 to 5 days. And this is what we call the incubation period. The mode of transmission of cholera from one person to person is through the fecal-oral mode of transmission. So contaminated water, contaminated food, contaminated hands of food handlers or people working, leading to transmission to these to inanimate objects as well as food and water. Now, many individuals, the majority of individuals that acquire cholera can have an asymptomatic illness. And only 20% of those with cholera would have symptoms, and 1 in 10 of those would have actually severe symptoms. And those that, and these, by severe symptoms, they could lead to hospitalization, and they could also lead to death. But this would be depending on whether we are talking about high-risk individuals, such as immunosuppressed people, travelers to endemic areas of cholera, healthcare workers that are in first-line responders, immunocompromised people, elderly, and children. The symptoms that we look for when we talk about cholera include profuse watery diarrhea. And there is a specific, actually, term that we use for the diarrheal stool following infection with cholera, and this is the rice water stool. It is like it is whitish, and that profuse, similar to a rice water. Individuals affected and showing symptoms with cholera can have vomiting, suffer from vomiting, thirst, leg cramps, restlessness or irritability, and of course, like I said, based on which high-risk group the individual acquiring cholera belongs to, we could have severe disease and consequently hospitalization. The treatment for this illness is extremely simple, and this is through the use of oral rehydration solutions. So this is really very simple disease to treat. And in severe cases only, physicians and clinicians prefer to use antibiotics. And there are data showing that, adding zinc to antibiotics, specifically to children suffering from cholera, would promote actually a lower version of the disease. And so this is basically, I see it as a simple disease because the measures that are needed to prevent it, to control it, and to treat it are also simple. And so access to safe drinking water is what we need. Personal and hand hygiene. Cooking well our food and treat, well our vegetables and wash our fruits well. And, of course, a good sewage disposal system. Otherwise, we would have a spillover from that system into drinking water and consequently leading to infections. We do have cholera vaccines, actually, and some of them are available. The first one, which is the Vaxchora, is actually available in the U.S., and it's given and offered to individuals between 2 and 64 years old orally in a single dose. The other three vaccines that you have in front of you are actually pre-qualified by the World Health Organization. They are not available in the U.S., but they are available as part of a stockpile that has been put aside in order to deploy those vaccines upon need. All of these are vaccines that are also given by orally, by mouth. However, they differ from the first one by the fact that they are of two doses. And these, the first one, for example, in front of you is given to children also 2 years and older. And then the other two, the last two, are from 1 year to and more. Now, the one important thing that we always have to remember is what is the vaccine effectiveness of these whenever we have a cholera outbreak, because these are actually used whenever there is an ongoing outbreak, or they are also used for those individuals that are traveling to endemic area in order to prevent the acquiring cholera in endemic area of cholera during travel. And so, in most of the cases, the first one, and since it is given in a single dose, it provides protection of vaccinated individuals for a length of 3 to 6 months, whereas the rest, they can reach up to actually 2 years of protection. During pandemics, epidemics, and outbreaks, and you know, I have to mention the stockpile of these vaccines. We have shortage of this stockpile, and this is why, in most of the cases, whenever we use those vaccines, we are using them rather in a single dose rather than two doses, while of course keeping in mind and weighing the benefits versus the risk. And this is only because of the shortage of that stockpile that was established by the World Health Organization in 2013. Of course, vaccination, and I'm a pro-vaccine advocate of vaccination, are important in order to treat vaccine-preventable and prevent vaccine-preventable diseases. The shortage has been ongoing due to the the increased and or the rise in cholera outbreaks globally, and not only in low and low middle income countries. And this is why, like I said, we are recommending, and the WHO is recommending, a one-dose offering of that vaccination. The Global Task Force on Cholera Control has, advanced an important roadmap. And this roadmap, actually, they call it the 2030 roadmap. And within this, the aim of this roadmap is actually to, by 2030, have 20 countries eliminate cholera. And 90% also by 2030, we have a 90% reduction in cholera death. And of course, this should happen through addressing three important axes that are in the middle column in front of you. And first, the first important axis is the early detection of the ability to detect early cholera in among infected individuals and countries affected by cholera. And not only detect, but also the ability to respond quickly to contain the outbreak. In order to do that, we need multi-sectorial sectoral interventions, specifically in hotspots or where you do have this cluster of cases or outbreak of cases. And of course, the effective coordination at all levels nationally, but also regionally, because this, infectious diseases, they do not have any limits across borders. So they cross borders and consequently, in order to uphold regional and global health security, we have to have this effective coordination during the intervention for the prevention of cholera and responding to cholera outbreak. Unfortunately, we are now in 2023, close to 2024, and I'll show you a map in a few seconds whereby cholera outbreaks is, you know, ramping all over the globe. And I'm not sure whether this 2030 roadmap is too ambitious to be implemented, but, you know, we have time to see. Now, when we talk about multi-sectoral interventions to control cholera, and then if we've learned anything from the COVID-19 pandemic is the importance of the crosstalk between, you know, those that are involved in prevention, control, preparedness, as well as response and recovery. And this would start from the political commitment, academia, research institutions, community mobilizer, ministries of public health, department or, of health, all of these. Now, for the for cholera specifically, and under the UNICEF, we have the WASH, or the Water and Sanitation and Hygiene Program. And the aim of WASH is actually to provide individuals, you know, with all what they need in terms of supplies, kits, rehydration solutions, training for hand hygiene, in order to prevent not only cholera, but also other types of diseases that are transmitted similar to cholera. Many of them are also viral diarrheal diseases as well as bacterial diarrheal diseases. But then yet again, in order to bring the loop together, so the UN agencies' involvement, the WASH program, along with the surveillance, which is the systematic approach of collecting data and reporting and analyzing and interpreting, but also sharing the information of this of the data that we collect in order to prevent future outbreaks. All of these are important components of the access that we've mentioned earlier. Of course, we need to have access to cholera vaccines, and this is tricky because we do have shortage in the stockpile, but it's not only the access to cholera vaccine, but also the ability to deploy it within a country, like low-income countries or lower-middle-income countries. There are a number of logistics that are involved in the deployment of the vaccine and the distribution of the vaccine. So all of these add challenges, and this is why we have to keep them in mind. We need to also have a strong healthcare infrastructure and systems to be able to respond and to protect the community, and all of these would require extreme coordination, concerted efforts between different stakeholders, as well as leadership. One of the, graphs that I always look at, and every time I keep on looking at it, I get surprised and surprised. But this is in front of you, the data from UNICEF about the population using drinking water sources by risk of fecal contamination. And right there, we are saying that we do have a huge, and this is only some of the countries that we have reports from between 2014 and 2020, because there are surveys that happen through ministries of public health and Department of Health, and they collect this data from different entities within countries. And Lebanon is one of those whereby we only have 47% of the water actually the drinking water sources that have low risk of fecal contamination. And with fecal contamination, we have exposure to different types of bacterial agents and viral agents that would lead to to diarrheal illnesses, and one of them could be cholera. And so this is also a map of the different countries that have suffered during only the past year from cholera. And you have them, you know, Lebanon, Syria, and Asia, Africa. 2 days ago, another country in the Eastern Middle East and Northern African region has a huge uprise in the number of cholera cases. Iraq, Syria is even though we had a decline in the number of cases, cases across time, and this is what happened since 2022 and until 2023. We had, you know, an increase. Of course, Syria is a country in conflict. We do have weak healthcare infrastructure, and breaching of the infrastructure of the water disposal systems and the wastewater, you name it, and consequently, we had this unprecedented increase in cholera starting 2022, and which continued and still continuing, like I said, until now. You see that in January 2023 and the first week of February, we have a decline. This, of course, is not related to vaccination or prevention of the spread, but due to the lack. Happened is that the earthquake that hit Turkey and hit also the northern part of Syria, so reporting was decreased, and this is why we have this. Now, why I'm showing this about Syria when the talk is about the case of Lebanon? Lebanon is a small country in the eastern Mediterranean region, and we have a population between 5.5 to 6 million people, but we host 1.5 million Syrian refugees that are distributed across the country, and these are the data from the UNHCR, in camps, in informal settlements, and like I said, those informal settlements and camps are really far from providing safe access to water, and they are overcrowded. So there's a, you know, transmission of all sorts of communicable diseases, and you know the hygiene component is compromised and suboptimal, and consequently a number of diseases spread across, and of course we host them, we live close to them, and we are, you know, within the same country. And so the first case of cholera was detected in Lebanon in October 4, 2022, was in a male, 51-year-old, in an informal settlement. And just few words about Lebanon and the impact of this, because one case led to an outbreak that I will show the data in a minute. Lebanon has been suffering from a number of challenges. So, and you know, the crisis that we are passing through is described as the worst economic crisis since the Civil War. And this has been happening since 2019. And then COVID-19 pandemic hit in 2020, which exacerbated that economic crisis. We have the devaluation of the Lebanese currency against the US dollar, and we do have the implementation of an informal capital control whereby we do not have access to our saved monies in banks. And so we do have depletion of, at one point of time, you know, 2020 and 2021 and early 2022, of the foreign currency. So we were not able as a country to actually import medicines, personal protective equipment, different types of devices. And of course, all of this was also exacerbated by a huge explosion that happened in August 4, 2021. And, you know, these had led to an extra type of stress and burden on an already weak and fragile healthcare system and healthcare infrastructure. So the first cholera case, like I said, was actually detected in the northern, in one of the camps in the northern part of Lebanon, in Akkar, and towards the north, in front of you. And however, soon after that, and the first death followed 1 week after that, within 2 weeks, we started like the movement of cholera. It's interesting because this 51-year-old male that was hospitalized because of cholera actually transmitted, there was a transmission discrimination within the healthcare facility and to a healthcare worker. And so things, you know, started to spill over, not only in camps. And within a few weeks, we started seeing not only in the northern part of Lebanon, but also in an inner area. This is Baalbek and Hirmel. We do have a number of Syrian refugees there, but also they are, you know, the hosting community, they live together. And so soon after, we started having the spread of cholera, and then you can see that the darker the color is, the more the number of cases, and it was traveling all across Lebanon. And of course, this was also, we've seen cases in Mount Lebanon, in Beirut as well. And what we could think of, you know, if we're saying that the areas where camps are or the informal settlements with poor hygiene and the poor access to safe water and clean water, so these would promote the transmission of cholera. But the question would be, why all over Lebanon? So because of the economic crisis in Lebanon, so we have we had shortage of electricity, shortage of fuel, and the water treatment plants were not working. The sewage disposal system were not treated well, and consequently, this promoted actually that transmission all over the place. And so if we look at the few numbers, so soon, and by November, towards the end of November 2022, we had more than 300 cases of cholera. And these bars, they represent the absolute number of confirmed cholera. This is by lab confirmation of cholera cases in the different governorates. We call them different areas, the governorates in Lebanon. So as you can see, the Akkar and North, this is the blue, and the yellow ones are mostly where the cluster started and it continued. This is, you know, communities, not only the Syrian refugees, but the Lebanese communities there are really, poor communities, rural areas, living in suboptimal conditions. And so this is why you see a repetition of, despite the decline of having the prevalence of the highest prevalence and incidence of these cases in these two areas. But nevertheless, we have had them all across until the end of December 2022. And we only have reported one case in January 2023 and none until now, thank God. But I don't see that we might be really out of the woods because of now the outbreaks that we are seeing in Iraq and in Syria and the travel. And so this, we are still not out of the woods. Now, the age distribution of the cholera cases in Lebanon, the majority of cases were among children 0 to 4 years old, 33% of them. But then, as you can see, we've had them different age groups. You know, the spectrum of age was also affected. 16% of the confirmed cases were hospitalized. And in most of the most of these hospitalized cases were either children less than 12 years old or older individuals, 65 and above. So what did we do in order to prevent, and I'm going to go back actually to this figure because, you know, walking through the decline. So what happened is between the third week of October and the first few weeks of November, the Ministry of Public Health, in coordination with the Lebanese Red Cross, as well as UN agencies, including UNICEF and the World Health Organization, started to populate the labs of the rural areas with the ability to test and report for cholera. And this is, you know, this is a simple way of, in the lab, this, we have traditional methods that are very simple to detect cholera, but nevertheless, these hospitals and these rural areas in the north, the Biqa or Baalbek and other places, did not have them. So reagents were deployed, training of technicians and was performed. as well as a training of physicians to report immediately, because this is a notifiable and reportable disease that needs to be reported to the national office of the World Health Organization, and then the regional office, and then global as part of the international health regulations, since we are a member state of the international health regulation by mandate. And then, of course, we needed the vaccine, because we've been having the transmission across the country rather than being localized. And so this is when it took a lot of time, actually, to negotiate how and when to receive the vaccine and who is going to and what. And the first month was really chaotic. But then after that, 400,000 doses were actually deployed. They reached Lebanon the first week of December. And this is when we started the cholera vaccination door-to-door, mobile clinics as well. In order, we started with the hotspot areas, the northern part, in order to prevent the continuous transmission and to protect those that are specifically for children and elderly. We also vaccinated healthcare workers in those areas, and also vaccinated inmates, prisoners. And so two phases, and this happened in two phases. The first phase was during the first couple of weeks of December, and then after that, towards the end of December and the early week of January, we started the second phase of vaccination. And so we've received approximately 800 to 900,000 of these oral cholera vaccines, or OCVs, and we had, however, to provide or administer the vaccine through a single dose rather than two doses, and run through the risk of having a short-term protection of 6 to 8 months rather than the 2 years, because of the shortage of the vaccination and the fast spread of cholera. And so vaccination alone is not going to solve cholera in Lebanon or in any other country. But if you don't have actually if we don't address the root causes of the cholera outbreaks, as well as other types of diarrheal illnesses or vaccine-preventable diseases, then we will still be suffering and will be suffering from outbreaks and epidemics of infectious diseases due to the suboptimal living conditions that certain population are living in. And keeping in mind, I would like to mention something that I failed to mention, is that Lebanon was classified as an upper middle income country, and now it is a lower middle income country. So from 2019 until July 2022, this has changed because of all the challenges and the crises. So the UNICEF published this map, which actually they should have published and shared earlier, showing this is the map of Lebanon, and the darker as well and closer to red, the higher the risk of cholera. And to me, when I look at it, it's the entire country. And so, and this is only about the access to safe water and wastewater treatment plants. I would like to remind you that we had shortage of fuel, and so we were not able to use full-blown generators, and so we were not able to treat the water. And so this is when the Ministry of Public Health gathered the municipalities after this is a danger to me. This is a dangerous map, gathered all of the efforts in order to, along with the Ministry of Energy and Water, the different UN agencies, and sat together and put, a response plan to control cholera as well as prevent future outbreaks. And this included, parts of what I've mentioned earlier. This is increasing surveillance and case reporting, monitoring water quality and treating water, monitoring the wastewater treating treatment plants as well, and, you know, the breaches of the infrastructure that could contaminate the drinking water, training of trainers for the central and peripheral teams of the surveillance unit in order to be able to perform better contact tracing and report immediately cholera cases. And like I said previously, training hospitals and healthcare workers to diagnose and report cholera cases, and assigning referral, nine of the referral hospitals, and then towards the end, only five of them were working in all as referral hospitals to act as cholera treatment center. And so vaccine administration, of course, had a lot to do with this, in addition to this plan. And the vaccination was also an effort by Médecins Sans Frontières, different non-governmental organizations, the Ministry of Public Health, other types of ministries in Lebanon that went door to door and campaigned for the vaccine and offered the vaccine. And this is, you know, again, a summary of what we have been talking about, whereby UNICEF has updated its WASH program in order to make sure that they are including all of the entities to provide safe water for the Syrian refugees as well as, you know, the hosting community. And they helped actually the Ministry of Public Health and the Ministry of Water to repair some of the water networks and to provide fuel and to, you know, get fuel and provide fuel to have the generators of the wastewater treatment plants and the regular water treatment plants in different municipalities and governorates to be in action, and this of course contributed to controlling the further spread of cholera. And, you know, the hope would be that these types of interventions would continue to take place rather than taking place cross-sectionally, and that's it. And this is why, you know, we have to really in Lebanon to treat the root cause, like I said, and the factors that lead to the emergence and re-emergence of vaccine-preventable diseases as well as other types of vaccination. So it's important really for the government to invest in public water treatment, to continuously treat, you know, water that feeds into different municipalities and communities by continuously monitoring the quality of the drinking water, making sure that we have continuous electric supply to these water treatment plants and the disposal systems in order to prevent the emergence of cholera as well as other types of illnesses that would lead to further weakening of the healthcare infrastructure and would burden further the and add burden to the economic crisis that we have. Of course, we would have hoped that we have two doses of the vaccine, but nevertheless, the single dose offers a short-term protection, and we actually shared with the oral cholera vaccine, stockpile entities, the need to make sure that countries, endemic countries, cholera endemic countries, as well as countries, you know, that are susceptible and vulnerable to, because they are known, we know them, they are on a list, and we know why, to really prioritize the manufacturing of more vaccines in order to deploy whenever needed. And so it is also important to keep in mind that in addition to preparedness and response and the fact and the components that we have mentioned, it is really important to continuously perform epidemiologic surveillance, but also genomic surveillance. And by genomic surveillance, I mean to determine what is the type of agent that we are dealing with, whether cholera or not, because this will allow us to relay this information to the public health to policymakers and to the Ministry of Public Health in order to take the right measures, to deploy the right needs, and to perform also the right public health measures in order to mitigate and delay the transmission of different types of infectious diseases. And with this, I thank you for listening and for being here today.
much, Dr. Miller. With a question, please raise your hand and I will bring the microphone to you in just a second. But before we begin with questions,
the ICFRC wants to thank our supporters and donors for their support. If you would like to join ICFRC or make a gift or a donation to support our programs, please go to icfrc.org. Or if you're in the room, you can go to one of our signs and you can even get the little QR code and get right onto our website and make a donation that way. So we have a question here already. Thank you.
Yes. Haiti is a basket case, but I understand they didn't have cholera until about 15 years ago when some Pakistanis came over with the UN work or something. Why is cholera so rare in the Western Hemisphere?
Well, it is rare because of the cleanliness of the implementation of safe treatment for drinking water and the access to safe water. And also, you know, upper middle income countries and high income countries, they do implement the hand hygiene. They do not have the crowdedness that we have it in lower middle income countries, which promotes actually and the transmission of these diseases. So that's basically the most important component. In addition, of course, to like when we talk about fuel and when we talk, which is needed in order to actually have the water treatment plan working safely in order to continuously prevent the colonization of agents that would lead to cholera as well as other types of illnesses. If that component is not there due to weak healthcare infrastructure or health infrastructure, this is going to lead to. And this is something that the Western Hemisphere does not have, does not suffer from at the same magnitude and depth as low-income countries and lower and middle-income countries.
You presented a lot of useful and excellent information from studies. Are there any particular studies that you've seen that you would recommend in the relationship with cholera and environmental degradation? Because in certain portions of Africa and the Middle East, this is a real problem.
It's really important because, you know, and this is, thank you very much for bringing this point up, because this is related as well, and I can see the climate change component that is related to all of this. And we do have the some studies that are emerging about this, and I could share all of these with you. I'm not familiar, actually, with the environmental degradation versus cholera per se, but I can tell you that the global warming has an important impact on the rain seasons and drought, and this affects actually different types of phenomena. Flooding, and flooding is associated, or earthquakes, and these are associated with the breaching of the water infrastructure that would lead to mixing of the wastewater systems with the drinking water, and this would lead, for example, to cholera and similar types of illnesses. And the list goes on and on, not only for cholera, because we do have some vectors because of the, you know, disruption caused by global warming, some vectors that would transmit different types of viruses and agents that thrive, you know, with the changes in the temperature, and we have seen those as well, and would lead to the propagation and, you know, emergence and re-emergence of infections. But I would be happy to share some of these studies with you through the Peter or yeah.
Thank you very much for your wonderful talk. It's an important topic for all of us to learn more about. And part of what I was thinking about as you were talking are these overlapping and intersecting challenges. And I'm thinking about, you talked about the refugee crisis, internal and external displacement of peoples, natural disasters, climate change as well. I'm wondering if you can zoom out or back a little bit regionally. What is happening in relation to cholera in Lebanon and Syria's neighbors. Do you have any information about that?
So in Syria, it is tough to say because the healthcare infrastructure and the infrastructure of everything has been compromised due to sanctions, due to the conflict that is present there. So there's a lot of gaps happening, and that figure that I've shown, actually, this is what gets reported, and what the. But I expect that we have more than this, but we don't have access to that information. In Iraq, UNICEF, well, theoretically, UNICEF and the World Health Organization both have to actually intervene in order to support member states, as per the IHR mandate. And so this figure of the multi-sectoral type of interventions is what should be and what I expect is happening. I don't have an in-depth, eye about specifically Iraq, because, but again, Iraq is not also not in conflict. Syria is more prominent. But UNICEF is available there. They have all WASH programs, and supposedly this should happen in any place. I do not have, unfortunately, any idea about the deployment of vaccination to Syria. I don't have this information. But then this is important, what you've mentioned, because the Lebanese, the Syrian, and any country in the Middle East and North African region, or any state in the United States, or any country in Europe, if we want to uphold, the national health security, we have to also know and uphold the regional health security. So UN agencies and WHO would know more about these because they have offices and they are privy to certain information that we looking from, we don't have them unless we have access to them. So
this is a little bit more of a comment than a question. This issue of diarrheal diseases like cholera and climate disaster like floods and hurricanes, earthquakes, such as in Libya and Morocco, this may be an unfortunate equalizer between high and low income countries that will be forced upon the higher income countries to consider, because these climate disasters do not discriminate according to economics. So we saw in New Orleans the breach and the floods,
yes,
and the disaster that occurred down there with illness.
Yeah.
And I really hope there's a global awareness and acceptance that this is not going to discriminate. And many of these high-income countries have beautiful seaside resorts that are not immune to tsunamis and flooding and all the other kind of disasters that can come upon us. So I hope this is being taken seriously on a global level. And I wonder, actually, it is a bit of a question, whether or not you're hearing about this at WHO.
So the cholera global task force, actually, and this is a partnership of more than 50 organizations, UN agencies, academic, global alliance for, and this is what they work in order to achieve the aims that I put forward, which is by 2030, and this is the 2030 roadmap. And they are working on that, but the lack of equitable access to care and to health care, and the continuous emergence of conflict areas makes it really difficult as well, not only on the cholera global task force, but also on the final outcome. And so equity is really also important, and this is part of the component that gets affected as we go. And we have seen it in COVID-19, during the COVID-19 pandemic. So there are a number of health-related factors, but also social determinants factors and other types of factors that we need to keep in mind in order to reach. And I know that these are continuous discussions to do so. I would really hope that they would start by, having this oral cholera vaccine arsenal better stockpiled. And we are able to manufacture and deploy messenger RNA-based vaccines as well as other for COVID-19. In a few months, we should be able to do that for cholera and other types of vaccine-preventable, vaccine for other diseases, including cholera, that need to be deployed to these poor countries and countries in conflict and hosting vulnerable populations.
Thank you for the talk, Nada. Kind of along the lines of what Claudio was discussing. I'm wondering, with political instability, climate instability, economic instability comes health instability. And so we've got COVID, we've got cholera. Are there other diseases, viruses that you are on the lookout for in Lebanon or our health officials are on the lookout for within the MENA region? Yeah.
Thank you so much for this question, because this is only one piece of the puzzle. And we've been suffering since, the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic in Lebanon and the neighboring countries of measles outbreak. Lebanon has been suffering from an increased number of hepatitis A virus, which is another gastrointestinal type of agents. We've always had some outbreaks and hotspots in Lebanon and the neighboring countries, but this year, what we are seeing is completely different. And so this is why, one of the important part of preparedness and that we need to have in and well established is the lookout for other types of, and this not only through traditional types of epidemiological and surveillance types of activities, but also through the genomics. And we are trying actually to slip this in for hepatitis A and for measles. But yes, measles, hepatitis A, we had pertussis. We have, continuous circulation of diarrheal illnesses caused by Salmonella and Shigella and the system and E. coli, the enterohemorrhagic E. coli, which is typical globally, actually. We do have outbreaks of rotavirus and norovirus, albeit these, also do not have the part of the genomic surveillance that I would like to see in Lebanon and the Middle East and North African region. But yes, we do have all of these. Catch up on vaccination, access to vaccination for measles, we don't have it. At one point of time, due to an outbreak of hepatitis A, and this is in Lebanon, we had recommended the deployment of hepatitis A vaccine, and we had them in order to treat, those hotspots. And so we're asking as well to have more stockpile to be always on site to do so. Yeah. Unfortunately, a large number of infectious diseases is still emerging and re-emerging. For vaccine-preventable diseases, the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated that, because we do have data from the region that between 40 to 50% decline in catch-up on any type of vaccine. And imagine the impact on populations.
Well, I'm going to take my prerogative as host to ask one more. So when there are natural disasters, like we saw the earthquakes in Morocco, the flooding in Libya, mm-hmm. is there a protocol in place to go immediately to those places with vaccines or other things?
Yes, in fact. And this is part of the preparedness plan and, the loop of the multi-sectoral interventions. It is there, but you need the facilities and the ability to reach those areas. And you need also the capacity to do so. So you need the resources, the human resources, the trained resources. And, So capacity building is important. And whether you have the vaccines or you have the protocol is how do you transfer? Do you have the logistics to transport the vaccine to these sites? Because there are certain temperatures that we need to, for example, and this is one piece as well. So we do have them, but, and this is again important because it's all about the different components and the constituents of the spectrum of emergency preparedness, response, and recovery that should be there in any country in order to prevent what we are seeing now, what we keep on seeing. And I keep on saying this, that I thought that we've learned because of the COVID-19 pandemic, but then this mushrooming of infectious diseases events and other events keep on telling me that we still have a lot of work to do in order to address the different components of the spectrum that I have mentioned.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much, Dr. Mellum, for an excellent program today. Please join me in thanking her again.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.